Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson.
Good morning, Stuart.
Hey Sophia, we're still not in the same place.
No, we did manage a day in the same place yesterday, which is probably about the first time in a good month, I'd say.
So you're now back in the office with your glowing tan. I'm working from home. But it must be nice to be back in the office after your extended South of France sojourn.
It's very nice to be back and see everyone. And the weather's turned in France, so perfect timing to escape. And I also fortunately flew back on Sunday because on Monday all kind of hell broke loose and no planes went anywhere. So it was quite well timed all round.
Yeah, that plane mess sounded utterly horrific. One of our art directors, Mark Gilman, was stuck on a plane with his young son and for 6 hours, I think. 6 hours they were locked in a plane waiting to take off. Awful.
Yeah, it's one of my real panics about traveling with, because if everything runs smoothly, actually travel now with Lyra is pretty easy. She's now at an age where she likes an iPad and off you go, iPads and a snack and you're good. But 6 hours not moving, I think even she would start to lose interest in the iPad.
Well, that is one occasion when screen time, there's no limits on screen time on the plane. Screen out, become a zombie, watch whatever the hell you like. There's no limits, no filter, just don't bother me.
Yeah, well, you're used to getting all the Campbell clan to Australia, to be fair, which is a lot longer than 6 hours on a plane.
Yeah. Well, they're quite good. When they get old enough to interact without your help or supervision, when they can interact with the entertainment system in the seat in front of them, that's a great moment. It's like when the first time your kid is old enough to do the seatbelt up by themselves. So you're not constantly reaching to the back seat to do the seatbelt up. Little moments.
Yeah, parenting goals.
little moments like that. You think, yes, I never have to help them interact with an entertainment screen again. This is a good day. But enough about that. Let's talk about how do we get from there to the Northwest Passage? Go on, over to you, Sophia.
God, it's going to be quite the segue. I'm trying to think of a connection. Well, in some ways, it potentially isn't a family-friendly destination. There you go.
Excellent.
Is the Northwest Passage. But we are seeing a number of super yachts choosing to go there. That was professional.
That was. You'll be on Radio 2 before the end of the week. So we thought we'd talk about the Northwest Passage. Actually, this was inspired by a news story that was flagged to us about the Explorer Yacht, the Fedship Explorer Yacht Shinkai, the 54.9-meter Fedship delivered in 2021. Super, super capable Explorer and recent recipient of a World Superyacht Award. So she made the local news up in Canada for rescuing a few fishing boats that had become untethered from their moorings. And the locals were very grateful for the crew's help in returning the fishing boats. So the story actually wasn't as dramatic. Originally, we saw the headline and thought, oh, wow, Shinkai has been involved in a fishing rescue. But actually, it turns out all they were doing was chasing down some wayward skiffs and returning them to
I'm sure they are highly valuable to the people that use them for fishing, but yeah. I sort of imagine stranded fishermen, but it wasn't actually quite the case.
No, it wasn't, but it did lead us down a Northwest Passage rabbit hole for which we're grateful to Shinkai. So she's up there in Canada navigating the Northwest Passage right now. She's currently in Arctic Bay in Nunavut. She's done an amazing cruise. If you follow her track on Boat Pro, she went to, was in Norway earlier this summer. She spent a lot of time around Bergen, then headed west to Reykjavik in Iceland, and then further west to Nuuk, the capital of Greenland. So I knew nothing of Nuuk. I had a suspicion Nuuk. I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but I had a suspicion it was the capital. How many people do you reckon live in Nuuk, Sophia?
I mean, I basically have a terrible understanding of the world and populations, which I should kind of caveat this with. It really shocks my husband how little understanding I have of how many people live in cities. But so it's the capital, but Greenland's presumably pretty sparse. So I'm going to say 30,000?
Well, My instinct would have been about the same, actually. But according to my extensive research on Wikipedia, the capital of Nuuk is actually 17,635. Biggest city, biggest town in Greenland. It was founded in 1728 by Dano-Norwegian missionary Hans Egede. And Nuuk is the Greenlandic word for cape.
How does that compare to Monaco?
Monaco's 40,000 permanent residents.
Wow, okay.
Around 40,000. You know, it's not a million miles away, really. So Shinkai spent a bit of time there. She then went even further north in Greenland before heading back down to Nuuk and then going west again to Nunavut and entering the Northwest Passage proper in August. Interestingly, when we were looking into Shinkai's passage, we learned through BoatPro's AIS system that she's not the only boat up there. There's some other significant super yachts currently navigating the Northwest Passage. Synthesis, the 74-meter Amels from 2021. She's currently off Cornwallis Island. So she left Greenland on the 18th of August. Before heading into the Northwest Passage proper. And you can see from her track, she's ducked into loads of little inlets and bays on her journey. There's another amazing boat up there, which a boat I hadn't ever come across before, but looking into her, she's just amazing. So there's a boat called Tekla. She's a 36.88 meter classic sailing yacht. She was built in 1915. So she's done the opposite to everyone else. She's gone west to east, and she's currently in Fort Ross on Somerset Island, right in the heart of the Northwest Passage. And she's had an amazing year. She was in French Polynesia in the Pacific in May. She headed almost due north from there via Hawaii and the Aleutian Islands before threading the narrow stretch of water between Alaska and Russia. And then she hugged the northern coast of Alaska and then entered the Northwest Passage. So I didn't know much about this boat, as I said, but she looks absolutely incredible. And you can actually buy passage on her in some of these amazing places. So she does a 14-day South and East Greenland trip from €3,450 per person, which seems like a pretty good deal to me.
Would you be able to share a yacht these days, though? I mean, you're so used now to your...
Well, it's a very different experience on Tekla, I understand, having looked into it a bit, because you buy a berth, but then you actually get involved in the sailing. You sail the boat. So it's not like you go there and read a book for 3 weeks and do absolutely bugger all. So you go, you learn how to, you know, I think you even helmet briefly. You kind of learn the ropes, literally, and sail the boat, which I think sounds absolutely amazing. She's got an incredible history, this boat. So she was built as a herring drifter in the Netherlands. In 1915, as mentioned, and she spent a few decades roaming the North Sea. In 1935, she was sold to Denmark and used as a cargo ship and operated as a working vessel up until the late 1970s. In the 1980s, she came back to the Netherlands and was converted to a charter vessel for European waters. And then in 2006, she was sold again to its current owners, who use her to cruise in these far-flung waters. And the Sluk family, who are her part owners, as I understand it, also crew the boat with you. So I'm totally taken by the whole thing. And if you look at pictures, she's the most romantic looking boat, classic herring boat, and you can sail her. It looks amazing.
Quite a rabbit hole you found last year.
Yeah.
Hole in the rabbit hole. It's impressive.
Like a classic boat rabbit hole. But she does so many sea miles, this boat. Yeah, it looks amazing. So I'll be keeping an eye on Tekla, but I love that about this business and discovering these things. So I'd never heard of this boat before. Completely, you know, I know a lot of super yachts, but I'd never heard about Tekla.
Encouraging.
And then you suddenly come across this boat and you find out a bit about its history and you fall completely in love. I thought it was amazing. There's another sailing boat up there at the moment, and that is the massive 86-meter Ketch Akiyo. So she was in New England in early summer before heading north, and they hit Greenland in July and spent almost a whole month hopping up the incredible western coast, in and out of the fjords up there. And then they crossed to Canada in mid-August and entered the Northwest Passage. So she's currently off King William Island, which was named by James Clark Ross in 1830. Any other knowledge about why King William Island might be famous, Sophia?
Absolutely zero. And I also can't read the script fast enough for what you've written to pretend.
So the reason King William Island has been in the news a lot recently is because the wrecks of HMS Erebus and Terror were found on the seafloor in different points, but just off the island fairly recently. Because a decade after 1830, Sir John Franklin's doomed expedition to chart a course through the Northwest Passage founded just northwest of the island, and his two ships, Erebus and Terror, were lost. All on board died of exposure or starvation. And Erebus was discovered in 2014 and Terror in 2016. And I know Shinkai has got a sub on her. So I think if I was taking an explorer yacht up there with a sub, the temptation to dive the wrecks of Erebus and Terror would be very, very strong indeed. I'm not quite sure what protections there are around the wrecks, but if you are able to dive them, I think that would be absolutely incredible. What a piece of history. And I had a look back at the Northwest Passage over the last 5 years, and if my Boat Pro calculations are correct, 2019 was the biggest year, with seven superyachts traversing the famous sea route. No boats went through in 2020 for obvious reasons. In 2021, just one big yacht made the trip. There were five boats in the Northwest Passage in 2022 and four so far this year. But this is the year of the big stuff. The big stuff's up there this year. So Akiyo and Synthesis are the largest sailing yacht and motor yacht, respectively, to navigate the Northwest Passage in the last 5 years.
So which was the first super yacht to do the Northwest Passage? Because it was only relatively recently, right?
Yeah, fairly recently. I think it was a motor yacht called Turmoil, which is a kind of a classic, tough-looking explorer yacht, you know, with the long bow and kind of all the big superstructure aft. I think it was Turmoil. I think it was a Vrypak boat. I learned this because when we made a video with Vrypak last year, and they've got this record of the most boats carrying their design through the North. So they've designed more boats through the Northwest Passage. They've navigated the Northwest Passage than any other design studio. I think I've got that right.
That's cool claim to fame.
It is a very cool claim to fame.
And do you know which year she first did it?
Early 2000s, I'm going to say around the turn of the millennium, somewhere around there. So, you know, like you said, not a million years ago. And recently, I think the average is kind of four or five yachts up there each year. I just think it'd be an amazing thing to do. And I don't know if you remember a few years ago, Latitude went through east to west, west to east, then east to west. And the video they made was just incredible of their journey through. And, you know, there was lots of press about that trip, but fantastic, really inspirational stuff.
Yeah. And speaking to her owner as well about that trip, it sounded amazing.
Yeah. Anil, he's not shy talking about it. He's obsessed with polar bears.
And he gets out his phone and he shows you all the different pics. It's amazing.
But great stories. And I didn't know Synthesis and Akiyo were up there. I didn't know Shinkai was up there, guiltily as well. I should have known that. We'll try and extract a story from one of those boats because, you know, I don't care how many times we tell that story. It's always cool and original and new and fun, and the photos are fantastic. So, I'll start harassing people.
So the Northwest Passage and the Amazon both seem to hold a similar obsession for you.
Yeah.
In that you sort of regularly demand features on them, which we're... Which I think is your favourite? If you had to go on one tomorrow, you were offered the trip, the call up.
Oh, that's really tough. I think the Amazon might edge it just because I think it's even a rarer yacht experience than the Northwest Passage nowadays. And actually what's really reignited my interest in the Amazon is reading in the October issue, there's a feature about Malcolm Forbes. And in the 80s, he took his boat, the Highlander, up the Amazon when it was just complete. It's unheard of now, but it was completely unheard of then. And the adventures they had on that trip, some of the stories are just fantastic. The former king of Bulgaria was a passenger on this trip. And they talk about cruising up the Amazon and, you know, being kept awake all night because logs were hitting the hull and the noise that made reverberated throughout the entire boat. And coming so close to the bank, you could almost reach out and touch the jungle and stuff like that. Just amazing stories. So do not miss that one in the October issue. It's a very special story. So the Amazon would edge it, I think.
Okay, good to know. Just also so that listeners can know which features are going to be. you've had rivers recently, though, so you've got at least another 6 months before he can.
You'll get another one soon. And then we'll have to do a Northwest Passage feature again now.
Yeah, and then a catamaran special. That's the year done.
Yeah, exactly. we will include a link, actually, in the description. A couple of years ago, last year or the year before, we did this quite comprehensive story about how to navigate the Northwest Passage, the politics of it, various rules and regs. So we'll put the link in the description. So if you are heading up there, well, first of all, save a berth for me and then read this how-to guide. It will be enormously helpful. All right, moving on.
Am I in charge of this segue as well?
Yeah. How are you going to navigate this one?
So I'm going to say we're going to move on now to a bit of news, which is slightly closer to home for Stuart and I anyway, which is that Princess Yachts have announced their new CEO as Will Green. He has spent more than 20 years at the company, so I think he's quite familiar to a lot of people, and was most recently serving as executive commercial director. And according to Princess, he helped usher the yard into a sustained period of commercial success. He said of his appointment, "It's an honour to be appointed as CEO of Princess. Those who know me will recognise the passion I have for the brand. So this is an exciting opportunity to shape the next chapter of the business and build on its amazing legacy."
Yeah, we just thought we'd flag this one because Will has been at the company for an awful long time. I've known Will for a long time, since I got into the yachting industry way back in the 2000s. And he's a hugely knowledgeable guy, lovely fella. And he's been at Princess, knows that company inside and out. So I'm thrilled for Will. I think it's a really exciting appointment for him. And I can't wait to see what he does with, you know, a very, very proud British shipyard, massive employer down in Plymouth, build great boats. And I think they're in very safe hands with Will at the helm. So congratulations. And very exciting future for Princess Yachts, a very, very proud British institution. So I'll try and segue to the next one, should I? It's the brokerage market, isn't it? There's always something to say about the brokerage market. And I mean, this is huge news coming out of Fraser's offices, and that's the 89-meter Amel's superyacht, Here Comes the Sun, was sold after just 4 months on the market. So Stuart Larson of Fraser represented the seller, Antoine Larique introduced the buyer, Antoine obviously of Fraser as well, so an in-house deal for that company, which is fantastic for them. And she was jointly listed with Tim Vickers of Burgess at the time of the sale. She was asking $195 million. So she's the second largest yacht sale of 2023 after ARPO, which is now called Lady Georgia. She was asking €330 million, and she sold after just 3 months on the market. So Sophia.
So as we say, Here Comes Sun's now second, but going down the list, so the third largest sale, open sale of 2023, was Arrow, and she sold for $139.9 million. And again, that was after just 10 weeks on the market. And then rounding out the top five, a Soaring, who was $88 million, and the Heesen Lucene that was asking $82 million. It does feel like that top end of the market, there's some yachts which are moving seriously quickly.
Yeah, so none of these boats were hanging around, were they? So Here Comes the Sun, sold in 4 months, asking $195 million. ARPO sold in 3 months, asking €330 million. Arrow sold in 10 weeks, asking $139.9 million. Soaring was on the market a bit longer, wasn't she?
I think so, yes.
She was asking €88 million. And Lucene, the Heesen, sold quickly, asking $82 million. We should do something about the quickest brokerage deals, shouldn't we?
Well, because there was also the FedShip project, Sakura, and that again sold in just 6 weeks.
I mean, that is unusual to see such big units getting shifted so quickly. Because usually, I mean, the old rules were that it takes kind of 18 months to sell a boat that big. But these things are selling in months, which is pretty phenomenal, really. So it shows us a very active, very, very active top end of the market. Mm. So if it's a good product and it's asking a lot, it doesn't seem to matter. It will get sold. Yachts that might not be sold so quickly.
See, I was going to say, at the other end of that, so we've actually, Daya, who's our wonderful intern, has put together a piece on kind of the quirkiest yachts in the world. And I was having a little look through that and realised that actually quite a few of them are also on the market. And some of them have been for a little while, which, as you say, probably isn't hugely unsurprising because they're looking for a unique owner to take them on. But we thought we'd just do a quick roundup of some of the quirkier ones out there. So the first one, I think, is it Asian Lady? Is that how you pronounce it?
Asian Lady?
Asian, yeah. How Asian or Asian?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never been aboard. It's one of those kind of mystery boats, really. I'd love to have a look because it's a wild-looking thing.
Yeah, so she's 1.5 hulled, essentially, which is based on a design of a proa, which is a traditional Austroasian sailing vessel. And I think I'm right in saying that she was built like that because the owner's wife got seasick, and the idea is that it's incredibly stable. Her stability was put to the test because she was involved in the tsunami in 2004. She was anchored off Phuket and survived that. But as well as that, she's got an amazing space on board. So she's got a 160-meter master cabin with a private balcony and office. She's a pretty remarkable design. She's still in the market with Raffles Yachts. I don't think she's being pushed that heavily. The last asking price we had for her was $27 million, but I understand that she's had a substantial reduction since then.
We talked about her some time ago, didn't we? And I think we figured out in price per gross ton terms, she was extraordinarily good value. She's not for everyone, this boat, clearly. She's a very unusual looking boat. Very non-traditional, or very traditional if you're a fan of the proa. I think if should need a refit, I think, because I think some of her interiors are quite dated, but huge amount of space. 160 square meter master cabin.
Yeah, huge.
Ooh, yeah.
So next on our list, I think we spoke about it recently, is this the largest wooden super yacht in the world. So she's made of teak and JRP. And we've put photos of her before because she always does wildly well on social media because you kind of can't really believe what you're looking at. She is still in the market. She's in Dubai asking $8.995 million. She's got a 10.6 meter beam, so she's actually fairly sizable. Got lovely Italian interiors, apparently. But she's another one that's looking for an owner with a special taste.
And we don't actually know the name of this boat. No one seems to know its name.
We just call it the largest wooden super yacht.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll put a link to it because it's extraordinary. You'll know it when you see it, I think, because it's so unusual. There's nothing. It is totally unique, this boat. Enormous wooden super yacht. I think she probably works out price, you know, price per gross ton. She probably works out quite favourably as well. $8.995 million.
And next up, Stu, have you ever been on board Adastra?
I haven't, no. We did interview her owner some years ago in the magazine. So we got some lovely pictures of her. I've never been on board. So Adastra, we should explain, is that amazing trimaran built by McConaughey Yachts. When was she built? She must be 10 years old.
2012, I think she was delivered.
Yeah, so around just over 10 years old. Extraordinary looking thing. Amazingly capable boat. Done, again, like some of those boats we mentioned earlier. Huge amount of sea miles under her keel. Super fuel efficient. I think she can cross the Atlantic twice before needing to refuel, which for a boat of her size is very impressive. Trans-Pacific range of 10,000 nautical miles. Yeah. Again, you know, she's a beautiful boat. Mm. When you see her, she's beautiful. You can't deny she's a good-looking thing. unlike some of the other boats on our list. But
the emails are going to come flooding in, Stuart.
I know, but she's but unique, you know. And you boats that are unusual and unique sometimes are harder to sell, or mostly are harder to sell. But there is an owner out there for this boat because she's so proven and so cool.
Yeah, well, she's asking $10 million with Burgess. Next on the list is another one that we're kind of all familiar with, which is Royal Falcon 1. And of course, the story here is that the owner gave the design team of Porsche a very simple brief that he wanted a spaceship on the water. So she's kind of inspired, apparently, by the high-speed catamaran ferries in Australia. So there you go, close to home, Stuart, catamarans and Australia. and she can move at 37 knots. So I think it completed the task. She was completed at a Swedish shipyard, and the naval architecture came from Incat Crowther. She is asking 22.95 million euros with Campers and Nicholson.
Yeah, Royal Falcon 1. Again, this is one of those boats I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing when it popped onto the scene a few years ago. And it got quite a lot of press ahead of one of the Monaco yacht shows, didn't it? Because it was it was anchored off the show. Porsche, sensational.
Oh, gosh.
Manufacturers
where are we going?
Riding the cars. Whether that's translated well to a boat, I don't know. Look, I'm not a massive fan of how this boat looks, if I'm perfectly honest, but even though it's a catamaran, I feel like I'm betraying some core belief saying that. But inside, loads of space, loads of room, obviously. But yeah, you've really got to love the design. And it's not one I'm a huge fan of. But, you know, like all boats, there is someone out there for this boat. There is an owner that will spy her and go, wow, lovely boat. It won't be me, though.
So last on our list, we have Ocean Emerald, which was, of course, designed by British architect Lord Foster, who, of course, did the Yacht Club de Monaco and also the Gherkin in London. So she's got this kind of amazing sort of arched silver superstructure. And I think she spent a lot of time in Thailand, or that's certainly where I knew she was, because I think she had the first Thai charter license when they were released a few years, if I remember correctly. She was built in 2009, and then she's had a major refit and refurb in 2015, and she is priced on application with Camper & Nicholson's.
Now, this boat I have been on. I was on board her in Hong Kong. Singapore, some years ago. Look, Lord Foster, designer of the Yacht Club de Monaco, sensational, stunning building. Again, I wasn't taken.
Do you think we should take the Bambi approach here? If you haven't got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Yeah, perhaps. again, you know, it's an extraordinary looking thing. Let's say that's an extraordinary looking boat. And from a distance, it looks super cool. It's been in a Bond movie. There's the sweeping curve of the superstructure, and very, very fascinating, interesting, intriguing looking boat. But again, not one for me. But someone will fall in love with her and be very, very happy aboard Ocean Emerald. But let's talk about boats we would buy.
Yeah, that concludes our roundup of boats that Stuart wouldn't like to buy. I want a boat Stuart would like to buy.
So brokerage picks this week. So I've chosen Hayes, which is a 26-meter motor yacht built by Extra Yachts in Italy. She's one of these crossover boats that became very popular a few years ago. Loads of space, very open air, kind of penthousey, lofty kind of onboard experience, very comfortable. So she's asking 4.4 million euros with Fraser. And one of the reasons I've chosen Hayes, quite apart from the fact that the wafting kind of out onto the aft deck lifestyle on a boat, that really appeals to me. The Arcadia has the same kind of experience, that kind of, you know, some of these crossover boats have really mastered that inside outside flow. And I think Hayes does a very good job of it as well. Which is also owned by Steve Rigby, who was one of our World Superyacht Awards judges. And he is also, he's building something very exciting at the moment. And it, this is all some awkward roundabout way of getting me to plug the Explore Yacht Summit. Steve is coming to the Explore Yacht Summit in Monaco on the 9th of November to talk about his new project he has embarked on, that's in build currently, which is very, very cool. So if you want to hear about what Steve's built next, come to the Explore Yacht Summit. Tickets available now. But in the meantime, you can buy his old boat or his current boat, which is Hayes, this 26-meter with interior design by Lawson Robb, who are a very, very capable design studio based in London. Very eco-focused with photovoltaic cells in the superstructure. Yeah, lovely open design.
I think she's great value for 4.4 million euros, given that she was only delivered in 2021. And she's got a lot of space on board. I know, speaking to Steve, you know, she's kind of great when all the family are bored, but also great if it's just a couple of you. And yeah, I think she's good value.
Yeah, and I think that whole family boat aspect is kind of the point of these crossover boats as well. So I think she'd make someone very, very happy indeed.
So I didn't actually think we were doing brokerage picks this week because we'd gone quite brokerage heavy, and then I realised you'd snuck one in there, so I had to quickly find one. But I've gone the opposite end of the spectrum, because yesterday we covered that the 80-metre silver yacht Silver Edge has been listed for sale with Fraser, set for a 2026 delivery. So this is one for the future. So she's got the same slender profile as Silver Fast, but with a bit of a military twist, and of course was created by Espen Wainoe. Despite her length, she's only got a 2.8-metre draft, so she's pretty good for getting around in. The main deck features a 5-metre-long glass-bottom swimming pool and a sun lounge, as well as an oversized swim platform with twin staircases. She's got accommodation for 18 guests, and also has a 95-square-metre owner's cabin, so not quite Lady Asian, but still pretty sizeable. And she can also sleep the crew of up to 17. I also like her because other highlights include a wine cellar, which is obviously vital, a winter garden, and a touch and go helipad. So she is yours for $75 million, subject to final spec.
So this boat seems to be, this bridges the kind of gap between the Silver Fast style boats, which we're quite familiar with from Silver Yachts, and the Bold. You remember Bold was delivered a few years ago, very robust, very, very military look about it. And then Silver Edge, this latest one, carries a few more facets. So it kind of bridges those two styles. But the concept is very familiar. All aluminium construction. So low weight, low draft, narrow destroyer-like hulls. So huge range on offer, great efficiency for a boat of this length. Globe-trotting potential. And good looking thing. It's interesting that they've added those facets to the design. And this yard works exclusively with Espen Wainoe. And he's found a really happy home in Silver Yachts. So Silver Edge is asking $75 million. And so when's delivery?
2026.
Okay, interesting choice.
You could buy Hayes in the meantime for poshing around the Med.
You could buy quite a few Hayes's for your Silver Edge. All righty, interesting choices. Thank you, Sophia. We'll put links to those boats in the description. Let's have a whip through some headlines.
Yeah, so first up we have the 75.7-metre FedShip Superyacht Project 822 has launched from her dry dock at FedShip's Van Lent facility. This is the first time that the secret superyacht has been spotted since it arrived at the yard in September 2021. We don't know very much information about this displacement motor yacht. We think that RWD is responsible for the exterior and interior design, working in collaboration on the interiors with Susan Young. Pictures show us that she's got an ice white hull, a classic flared bow, and gently curving lines. We understand that she's still an aluminium build with a 13.6-metre beam, which gives her gross tonnage of 2,220. And she's joined by 15 other vessels which are launched or under construction across FedShip's facilities at the moment. They are super busy.
They are so busy. I mean, I lose track of the FedShip delivery and launch stories. It's wild. Every week there's another massive yacht poking out of a shed. Yeah,
they're keeping the yacht spotters, I think,
yeah,
hanging out down there quite a lot at the moment.
Yeah, just got you just need to buy a tent and just sit outside the Van Lent facility or the De Vries facility, and you keep very, very busy with the long lens. Next up, the news that custom superyacht builder Eco Yachts has launched the 56-meter support vessel Charlie 2 at its shipyard near Fremantle in Western Australia. She is the largest catamaran to be built in Australia. Good on you, Eco Yachts. Construction of the 1,041 gross ton all aluminium vessel began in 2020 and was commissioned by an experienced yachtsman. She is 5 meters longer than her predecessor Charlie, but the two share a raised helicopter platform aft. Naval architecture comes from 123 Naval Architects, while fit out, design, engineering, and electrical were all handled in house. So Charlie 2 is expected to commence sea trials at the beginning of September, with delivery several weeks later. So Charlie, I have been on her predecessor Charlie. So Charlie was at the same Singapore yacht show I saw open up all that actually some years ago. I know, so Eco Yachts facility down in Western Australia was one I visited a few years ago. I went down to see White Rabbit, the trimaran, when she was just before delivery. Very impressive facility. They're capable of doing all sorts completely. The custom is right for those guys. The range of yacht they can build is really, really impressive. The trimaran White Rabbit is a truly unusual yacht, and they did a great job on it. And then these Charlie series of support vessels too. So great experience with multi-hull and monohull platforms.
Do you know where White Rabbit, does she spend most of her time in Australia?
No, she's up in Singapore most of the time.
Okay. Because I was going to say, we don't see, I don't think I've ever seen her, because presumably she's always in Asia.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't venture far. I think she's a family boat and used for business functions quite a lot. Yeah, but extraordinary boat. Yeah, I got that kind of window to go see her a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember that. Didn't you literally go for like 48 hours?
Yeah, I didn't do my carbon footprint any favours, but it was kind of our only opportunity to see the boat. So it was do or die. So I jumped on a plane.
So next up, we have that Italian builder Wider Yachts has joined the hull and superstructure of Project Moonflower, which brings the 72-metre custom build another step closer to launch. Delivery is scheduled for 2025 after the contract for the yacht was signed in January 2022. The design is from Nauta Design, and the project is the largest construction to date for the Wider shipyard, surpassing its current flagship by 20 metres. The Moonflower 72 retains all the key features of modern yet timeless design, onboard livability and maximum connection with the marine environment. Fundamental characteristics to all Nauta projects, says Mary Padol, who's of course the co-founder and chief executive of Nauta Design. With Wider, we found just the right cocktail of technology and team organisation to make the project a reality.
Big project from Wider. So they've had some new investment and they seem to be up and running again, which is fantastic news. Last up, we have the news that Turkish builder Newmarine has launched the ninth unit in its very successful 37XP series. We think she's going to be called Oscar. Construction on the 37.2-metre yacht started in January 2022, and delivery is expected to her British owners in September. Accommodation is for 12 guests across 6 cabins, with space for 6 crew. Details are pretty sparse at the moment, but we think interiors were styled by Hot Lab in an ongoing collaboration between the shipyard and the Milanese design studio. She's got twin cat engines, max speed of 14.5 knots, and an impressive transoceanic range of 6,000 nautical miles. That brings us to an end of the news section and foregoing data this week. I have some very sad news for our podcast audience. So instead of some fascinating insight into the world of superyachting brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service, we'll leave you with the devastating news that Sophia, co-host extraordinaire, is leaving Boat International to pursue adventures elsewhere. Sophia, what can you tell us?
Hey, I am. So I'm very sad to be leaving. It has been a remarkable 8.5 years. I couldn't have asked for a better place to have spent it. But time has come for a change. So I am moving on to go and work for a PR agency called Sequoia, who people in the UK may well know, mostly back in the luxury travel space, which is obviously kind of where I was as travel editor. But they also have a couple of yachting clients. So I will still be around and in the industry, but sadly no longer on the podcast. Although maybe I'll have to come back at Christmas to find out whether I made some champagne. Yeah. Guest appearance.
Well, yeah, you've got to buy the little champagne. Well, legally, I think you're not allowed to call it champagne. So, I'm devastated to lose you. Every journalist winces when they lose one of their colleagues to the PR industry, but it sounds like a really, really exciting opportunity. I know you'll absolutely smash it.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you for putting up with me for 8.5 years. As podcast listeners know, we have a bountiful relationship. No, do get on pretty well. No, I'm very sad to be leaving you, Stuart, and the whole team, and of course the faithful Boat Briefing listeners. We thought we'd announce at the end of the podcast to really test out the faithful ones that stick to the end of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been an amazing journey, and yeah, leaving hopefully kind of on a high and. On to the next thing.
Well, I'm thrilled you're sticking around the industry or aside it. So we will be seeing you again, no doubt.
Yes. And I will be at Boat until the end of September. But this is likely to be my last podcast, probably.
We might try and squeeze one out of her
before
she goes. We'll see.
Another quick one.
But Sophia, thank you very much for all your amazing work at Boat International over the last 8.5 years. And we wish you all the best with your next adventure. And to everyone listening, thank you very much for tuning in to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Adam Geist and Naomi Wilson and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Send flowers to Sophia, courtesy of the office.
And one of us will see you next week.
And we'll see you next time. Take care.